Lowe's knows that free makes everything better. That's why our rewards members get free standard shipping on the things they need and want, starting at Silver Key status every day. Savings for rewards members add up fast, so why wait? Join for free today. Lowe's, we help, you save. Not available in Alaska and Hawaii. Exclusions and more terms apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/shipping terms. Subject to change.
Merkel Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Marius, Tack Theratrix.
I am Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison? Swangled in Fort Lauderdale.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Rockfin, Odyssey, Band.video, Vigilante.tv, or you are listening wherever podcasts are served, thanks so much. Appreciate the support. You can connect with me through the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com, or you can follow me on Twitter, at Macroaggression. Hey, it's not too late. You might have to rush, but if you are looking to get out of the cold and into someplace warm for the first week of February, February 6th through the 10th, 2023 in Acapulco, Mexico, have I got the event for you. And Acapulco is happening again. It's going to be wild. I'll be there speaking. Jeff Berwick will be there, of course. He's the host of it all. Max Egan, Larkin Rose, Dan Dix, Del Bigtree, Mark Passio, Dr. Carrie Madej, Dr. Andrew Kaufman, Ron Paul, Miriam Hanane. It's going to be a banger. Hey, if you've got the time, we've got the party. So use the promo code MACRO if you want. If you go to Acapulco.com and buy tickets or whatever, you can save yourself a little bit of money. Thank you to our sponsor, Legal Shield. This company has been in business for 50 years. They have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. And for those of you in the United States and Canada, you might want to check it out. It is the collective buying power of all of us directed towards high-power law firms in your area so that you can get access to these attorneys because we've all sort of contributed money to it and it just makes things a lot more accessible. It's a dollar a day. It's literally $30 a month for this program. And what that gets you is a variety of things. First of all, if you ever have questions about your rights, you can reach out to your attorney through an app on your phone. You can set up appointments. You can go in there and get legal paperwork drawn up. You need a will and testament. I mean, you do need a will and testament. The question, I suppose, is do you have one? If you don't, you need to get one. You need a financial power of attorney. You need a medical power of attorney, especially after what we just saw with COVID, people going into the hospitals, being incapacitated and not having that sort of directive hammered out in advance. Look, I say this because the last thing you want to do after you die is have the state involved in your affairs. My God, I just mentioned I'm going to speak at an anarchist convention. I despise the state. And even after I'm dead, I don't want the state involved in my business. So you've got to have a will or else the state gets involved. Those things cost, you know, it's going to cost you a grand to take care of that if you're for your spouse, another thousand. thousands of dollars on paperwork that you probably don't really want to get, but you know you kind of have to get. Do this. Go to the website, take a look, see if it's right for you. And if it is, you can sign up for, like I said, $30 a month and knock all this stuff out right away. The website domain is www.don'tgetpushedaround.com. It's not just for legal plans. They also have Identity Shield. There's a small business legal plan as well, though, if you own a small business. If you're a gun owner, or you carry a gun, there's documentation that you can get there as well. There's a lot going on. I encourage you to take a look at the website, see what you think. They tell us equal justice under the law, but nobody really believes that. You know that if you've got the money, the rules are quite different because you have access to better attorneys. So let's level the playing field. Let's make sure that you do not get pushed around by corporations or by other people threatening you or by the authorities or the state trying to tell you that you don't have the right to do something. You got to know what your rights are. Talk to your attorney and get that stuff straightened out. Also, if you have traffic tickets or IRS audits, you know, they've hired 87,000 new IRS agents. You don't think that's for the billionaire class, do you? Of course not. They're coming after us. And if they start digging around with you, you're going to want to have an attorney get involved and look at it. So Legal Shield is the place to do it. Don'tgetpushedaround.com is the domain. Also, it's 2023, don't you know? It's time for you to get yourself healthy. It's your New Year's resolution or whatever. I mean, it doesn't have to be a resolution. It can just be the day that you decide you're going to take control of your health. Chemical-free body is a fantastic place to start. If you need coaching and you need help from that, Tim James is available for personal coaching sessions as well. He'll talk to you about that. He's got a podcast, a Health Hero show that you can listen to and get great tips. But if you want to get really high quality products that actually work, Chemical Free Body is the place to do it. I've been taking their Green 85 coming up on 3 years now. It'll be 3 years in March that I've been taking it. I feel great. I don't eat enough vegetables, admittedly, and I use that as sort of a supplement. So if you feel like you want to take control of your health, one of the things that you can do is start adding Green 85 to your diet. So take a look at it. It's just a scoop of green powder mixed in with water or juice. Drink it. Takes you 5 minutes. Looks weird. Tastes great. Surprisingly great, especially considering how gross it looks. But I'll tell you, you'll feel fantastic. I really, really do feel great. So I can't recommend it highly enough. Chemicalfreebody.com is the website. Promo code MACRO. Save yourself some money. And now that the business is out of the way, let's get into the topic of the week, and that is the Twitter files. Now, I know. We knew that Twitter was censoring people. Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course we did. We knew. We knew that they were censoring people years ago. I got thrown off of Twitter, my first account, on my way back from Anarchapulco, February 2020. I mentioned this a million times before, for jokingly suggesting, asking the question, when are we going to throw Bill Gates into a volcano? I think it's a reasonable question. I was clearly joking. The algorithms have no sense of humor. I was not just suspended or given a timeout. I just was straight up deleted from Twitter. So I started again, and now you can follow me there at Macroaggression, and I assure you, I will be thrown off at some point. But I'm going to go down swinging. And so we know that that Twitter is sensitive and Facebook's even worse, I think. And we know that they're corrupt and we know that there's a political slant, an ideological slant happening in it with the management and the employees there. If you looked at and of course that's Democratic liberal leaning as opposed to conservative Republican leaning. And I'm not looking for a site that's conservative leaning either. I just want one that's indifferent. I just want a platform that doesn't care what your political affiliations are. You're allowed to talk and have the conversations. Well, that was not happening on Twitter. It just wasn't. And when they took a look at some just sort of interesting factoids about Twitter, what they found was with regard to political donations by the employees of Twitter themselves, meaning you work at Twitter and then you donate a little bit of money, I don't know, election cycle to your favorite candidate. I can't imagine a universe in which I would give money to politicians, but whatever. I guess a lot of people do. 99% of the Twitter employees donated to Democrats, and only 1% of them donated to Republicans. So people were saying, well, there's no bias at Twitter. Stop. You're embarrassing yourself. It's quite literally 99-1. So is it any surprise that it was leaning that direction? No, it wasn't a surprise. Did we know that people were being shadow banned and throttled and deleted and censored? And of course, I mean, we all know people that have had that happen to them. Accounts just disappear in the middle of the night. You post something, you know, it just goes away. And so we knew it was happening, but we didn't know the extent and we didn't know the mechanics behind it. And then Elon Musk enters into this agreement to buy Twitter, and Twitter freaks out, and then they want to fight him, and then he wants to back out, and then they want to make him finish the deal, and there's a whole lot of stuff going on that we probably don't know the real story about. And in the end, he finishes and closes the transaction and acquires Twitter. And then, like buying an old vintage car, you know, you just use this. They say, like, buyer beware, caveat emptor, right? You know, you get what you get when you buy this. You know, no, you can keep the receipt, but you're not going to be able to return it. And what he did was he lifted up the hood and took a look and went, holy shit. He described Twitter as being a crime scene. I, you know, it's one thing to like buy a store or a, you know, a business or a home where there's an active crime scene. You buy you spend $40+ billion on a company and describe it as a crime scene. That's not good. But of course, he saw what was going on inside there. He was able to read the internal communications. He was able to see what the settings were. He was able to go back through the Slack channels, the intercompany communication networks that were set up there. And he was able to kind of piece this together. Then, you know, because Elon himself is a polarizing figure, and I'm not going to get into the pros and cons of Elon. I anybody that does all this business with the Department of Defense, I automatically don't trust. If you're going to put brain chips in, I don't trust. But credit where credit is due. If you want to make Twitter a more open place for conversations, I'm in favor of that. I don't believe that is actually happening right now, because there's far too many people that are still getting kicked off of Twitter and still getting banned and still getting having warning labels put on their tweets. So it's by no means fixed, but it's, you know, it's trending in the right direction. I don't really exactly know what's taking so long. But anyway, Elon decides sort of quietly, I want to explain to the world what was going on here at Twitter. And the way that I think I'm going to do that is I'm going to invite certain journalists to come in, and I'm going to lay this information on them, and I'm going to have them, a condition of this agreement is that they post it on Twitter. They can later post it, you know, to their Substacks or whatever their websites. And the lead writer in this whole project is Matt Taibbi. And I like Matt Taibbi. Does he, you know, is he in our alternative media universe where he understands? No, not really. But I've read his books, Griftopia, and he's the one that coined the phrase, the vampire squid, when talking about Goldman Sachs sticking their blood funnel into anything that smells like money. I like his financial work. He does a great job with financial work, and he writes in a way that I connect with. But again, you know, I mean, he's not going to make everybody happy, clearly. And he did live in Russia for like 11 years and played basketball there, and also was a writer there. So there's going to be people on the left that are going to go, Russian asset, you know, all that shit, whatever. That doesn't matter to me. But he kind of drove the car on this. And then they brought in, they had additional journalists. They had Barry Weiss, they had Michael Schellenberger, they had Lee Fang, and a couple of others that were helping to sort of take a chunk of this, of the Twitter files as they are known, and put out a story about their chunk. and they released it in 12 different parts. And so what I want to do is I'm going to go through all the 12 parts, and it's important that we understand this for a variety of reasons. But one is because this level of thinking and this partnership and cooperation with the feds is not limited to Twitter. I think if once you understand this, and I'm gonna detail this whole thing, but you know it's going on at other social media companies, but you assume it's going on at other social media companies, and you would be correct. But when you dig into the Twitter files, you can read their internal communications where they're talking to the FBI, and they're saying that they are on board with Facebook and Google and Microsoft and Pinterest and Reddit and these where the feds are already working with them. So it's not speculation island. It's what's happening. But this is Twitter. So part one, I'm just going to go part by part. I'm going to read a little bit about it. I'm going to talk about the important features that, so I went through all of the 12 sections, read all the tweets, and this is why it matters and what we found. So part one is titled Hunter Biden Laptop Story in New York Post. Okay. So it was initially blocked. This story was blocked on Twitter due to, quote, hacked materials policy. So they were told by the feds that in advance of the Hunter Biden laptop story, there were meetings that were going on. And we're going to get into this towards the tail end of this because it doesn't necessarily go in sequential order. But they were told in advance of the Hunter Biden laptop by the feds, by the FBI, that there's going to be a Russian-backed organization that is going to leak very damaging but fake information about Joe Biden and Hunter Biden and these people. They knew that the laptop story was coming out. They knew it. And because they have spy, because they're the FBI, and they have everything tapped, and they have spies inside of all of these networks. So they knew before the New York Post printed this, that it was going to be printed, and clearly they ran it through their legal department, and the feds got wind of it and approached Twitter and said, you're going to be hearing some stories, but they're not true. They're fake. They're Russian disinformation. So when this came across, this Hunter Biden laptop story, Twitter was ready for it, and they blocked it due to hacked materials because they were told in advance, you're going to see that the Russians hacked into this computer and they're going to make up a bunch of stuff that didn't exist. But inside, the internal communications painted kind of a different story, where you have quotes from people saying, can we truthfully claim that this is part of the policy? They're saying behind closed doors, because they're saying hacked materials policy. So even their own employees are going, really? This is hacked? I don't think this qualifies. There's a lot of that going on. There's a lot of debate and dialogue going on. I want to make sure that I'm clear that by and large, Twitter was hardcore leftist, totally against free speech. But there were instances where you would see the screenshots of these Slack conversations, Slack being like an internal communication, a company, separate company that does internal communications where you can, teams can talk to one another, almost like an internal email or like a Discord channel, but for corporations. And you could read the back and forth between these. And there was a lot of pushback from some employees going, I don't know, man. I don't know. Especially when we get later to the Donald Trump part, where there were like people going, I don't think this is a violation. This isn't a violation. I don't think you should do anything to these people. So anyway, there was pushback against the Hunter Biden laptop. Not a ton, because in the end, it all got suppressed. But what we discovered was that Democratic members of Congress want more moderation on Twitter, not less. So any of those Democrats out there that are saying, we need free speech, you can shut up, because you're busted in the Twitter emails telling these people that you want more moderation. And when you dragged them in front of Congress, you demanded more moderation of content. So you demanded that Twitter censor free speech against your political rivals, which makes you a scumbag and quite literally a fascist, but not the imaginary ones that the left is always inventing. This is where we found out about Twitter lawyer Jim Baker. He was slowing up the process. So if you recall, the first Twitter files came out and then there was a delay. And then and Matt Taibbi came out and said, there's a delay before the second Twitter files. We're working on something. We can't really tell you about it right now, but hang tight. And everyone's like, what is going on here? Well, what was going on here was that the first batch of Twitter files was held up by Twitter lawyer Jim Baker. He was slow. Well, no, the first batch went out. The second batch was being held up by Jim Baker. And, because he was the former FBI general counsel from 2014 to 2018, he's quite literally not just working for the FBI. He was the FBI's internal lawyer. Okay. He's a Fed lawyer who went to work for Twitter to then go do Fed lawyer stuff at Twitter. So he's a double agent. And part of the cover-up squad, of course. I think that should go. So he was then fired by Elon Musk for vetting the first batch of Twitter files without the knowledge of the new management. You see, the new management didn't tell him that they were investigating. See, he was leaking. Apparently, what they did was this: they sent a very private email. This is genius. They sent a very private email to a group of people. And they want to see who's leaking. So you know how they do that? Every email is a little bit, the content is exactly the same and it's made to look like it's going out as a mass email. But every email is just a little bit different than the other one. And you've got to keep track of this. So there might be, the term might be just the phrase, first batch of the Twitter files. But between the word Twitter and files, instead of there being a single space, there's a double space. And if there's a double space between those two words, that's the one that the version that went out to Jim Baker. You write that down, double space between Twitter and files. If there's a double space between the word first and batch, that's the one that went out to, say, Yoel Roth, the head of trust and security. That there's a double space between the word batch and of, that's the one that went out to Vidya Gadde, right? So you make it so that it's almost impossible to notice when you're looking at the emails, but then how you track it is that that person that's not supposed to send it then sends that version to the media or to the Fed, and then the Feds post it and they say, this is what we got. Then you look at that version and you go, where's the double space? And in this case, the double space led back to Jim Baker. So they knew he was leaking. Real smart. Jim Baker, of course, there should be no surprise that he was leaking. He previously worked, like I said, at the FBI, but before that, he only worked for CNN, Bridgewater Capital, Brookings Institute, and then eventually Twitter. So he's deep state to his core, and he was fired, and he should be fired. So that's Hunter. Part one was Hunter Biden, and also a little bit Jim Baker, not to be confused with I have sinned, Jim Baker, though it would be funny. Part two, Twitter secret blacklist. Okay, shadow banning was happening, only it was called visibility filtering. We're not shadow banning. Remember when Vijaya and Tim Pool and Jack Dorsey went on Rogan, the four of them? And Tim Pool was like, you're shadow banning people. And they're like, we don't do that. And he's like, you do it and you are doing it. And they're like, we're not doing it. Well, they're not doing it. They're doing visibility filtering, which is shadow banning. So, but there was just low level shadow banning that would happen to accounts like mine or something. You know, there's a very, very small account. But then there was also a higher counsel for higher profile or controversial accounts. And they were doing things like putting different designations on certain accounts. So in the event, like in as the example of Dan Bongino, a popular sort of Fox News commentator, and he was put, they gave him a designation on his account called Search Blacklist. So if you search for him, you wouldn't find him. For Dr. J. Bhattacharya, they put him on a trends blacklist. So he wasn't allowed to trend anywhere. For Charlie Kirk, they gave him a do not amplify designation so that his tweets were not amplified. And there was a variety of these factors. In fact, one of the Twitter employees said it like this. He said, think about visibility filtering as being a way for us to suppress what people see to different levels. It's a very powerful tool. That's what they said. So we learned about the secret blacklist in part two. We moved on to part three. This was called the removal of Donald Trump. There's three parts to the removal of Donald Trump. This part, the first part of it is October 2020 to January 6th, 2021. Okay. And this is where Twitter was aggressively using visibility filtering, shadow banning, on Trump prior to the election, which is shitty. We find out here that Trust and Safety Chief Yoel Roth, who has a very disturbing Twitter profile or Twitter history from many, many years ago. He had a different account, not his own personal account. I mean, it was his personal account, but it was called something totally different, in which he made, he's a homosexual man, nothing inherently nefarious about that. But when you read his quotes, you know, the what he was posting in this secret non-public account, it was pedophilia adjacent. I'll just put it like that. I mean, I can't say for sure that he's a pedophile, but he is wearing the uniform of a pedophile. We'll put it that way. And he's the trust and safety chief at Twitter. Which is weird. Isn't it funny that conservatives were screaming for years and years and years about all the child pornography that was on Twitter, and they're so concerned with throwing everybody off, but yet that child pornography wound up staying on there. And who was in charge of it? Yoel Roth, who, like I said, might not be a pedophile, but he certainly is adjacent to it with his comments talking about school children and what it takes to fuck them. Stuff and you know, crazy things like that in his alternative Twitter account. So this guy, Yoel Roth, who was recently fired by Elon Musk, what took you so long, was meeting regularly, we find this out, with the FBI, the Department of Homeland Security, and the Office of Director of National Intelligence, so ODNI, in the run-up to the elections. So the trust and safety chief was having weekly meetings with the feds before the elections in order to, quote, fortify the elections. That's what the Democrats said they were going to do. They needed to fortify the elections, like by making sure that the Twitter chief and safety, or say trust and safety chief, was on your team and was silencing the people that you wanted to silence, like Charlie Kirk and Dan Bongino and Jay Bhattacharya and Donald Trump and all sorts of conservative voices. That is a form of rigging the elections. I thought January 6th was the worst thing that had ever happened in American history. I mean, at least according to AOC, it's worse than the Civil War and Pearl Harbor and 9/11 and the atomic bomb that we dropped and all that stuff. January 6th, where one conservative person died and a bunch of cops wound up committing suicide later. Not sure that was normal. Anyway, it's funny though, because they kept accusing Trump of Russian interference, you know, colluding with the Russians and interfering with the elections, when in actuality, it was Twitter colluding with the Department of Homeland Security and the FBI to rig elections. Isn't that funny? It's almost exactly backwards from the way the media and social media was portraying it. I guess that's just, that was just an oversight, right? Just classic projection on the part of them. We move to part four, also the second component of the removal of Donald Trump. This is one particular day, January 7th, 2021. This is the day after, obviously, January 6th, the whatever you want to call it, LARP at the Capitol. Twitter internally reconfigured their rules on that day in order to make a Trump ban fit. So Trump hadn't actually violated the rules with what he was tweeting on January 6th. So Twitter went and changed the rules so that Donald Trump was violating them. I think that's kind of an important thing to know. Now, I'm no Trump fan. I've been clear about that. But let's not pretend like that's not important. Let's do it this way. If this was done to Joe Biden, what would the left do? That's all you have to ask. If the roles were reversed in these cases, just ask what the outrage police, what would the media be saying? They would be saying that that was the worst thing since Pearl Harbor, you know? But at least one employee was concerned about a, quote, slippery slope in which an online platform CEO with a global presence can gatekeep speech for the entire world. So, yeah, they were right. They were very, even there were some employees that were like, this is a bad idea. Not many. And of course, they were overridden, so it doesn't matter. But Twitter changed its public interest policy to remove Trump. And Yoel Roth, for the record, wanted to ban Matt Gaetz as well. But that didn't happen because he hadn't done anything. Not that that matters. Not that that matters, but he wanted to. Part five, this is the third part and last part of the Trump thing. The removal of Donald Trump, January 8th, 2021, the day after January 7th. Twitter.com's internal communication showed that some employees said, quote, I think we'd have a hard time saying this is incitement, talking about inciting an insurrection. Yet they did it anyway. And then there was somebody else in the Slack channel saying, quote, maybe it's because I am from China. I deeply understand how censorship can destroy the public conversation. Yeah, but Twitter doesn't give a shit. They're not in the business of having a public conversation anymore. They're in the business of shaping reality with the help of the feds. And this was a decision made by Vijaya and Yoel Roth. And 300 employees of Twitter sent a letter to Jack Dorsey, then CEO of Twitter, demanding Trump be banned. And what was interesting about that was that they in these Twitter files produced screenshot after screenshot after screenshot of prime ministers and presidents around the world saying crazy shit that they didn't get kicked off for. Like one of them was like calling for citizens to grab guns and kill a rival faction. Like this like political leader in Africa, I forget which country it was like, I think it might have been Ethiopia, saying like, you need to get your guns and like go murder those people. And everyone's like, holy shit, you're saying that on Twitter? You're like the president of the country? And they I think they gave him like a 12-hour suspension or something, but they certainly didn't ban his account. That was the point of this, was to show all of the crazy things that other people had said in high-ranking governmental positions that didn't get them thrown off. And yet Twitter threw Trump off for questionable incitement. He wasn't inciting anybody. Because it wasn't a fucking insurrection. That's why. So we're then Vijaya is on the record in these Slack discussions wondering if Trump's tweet was coded incitement to further violence. So they're working backwards. We want Trump out. We want him off this platform. How do we make it happen? Well, the first thing they did was they changed their public interest policy. Okay. That was how they did it. They retroactively changed the rules. And then there was even pushback from a bunch of people that said, we don't think this is a good idea. But in the end, the employees that wanted to keep Trump, and I don't think they necessarily wanted to keep Trump, they just didn't see the justification for throwing him off. Those people that wanted Trump to not be thrown off were called Nazis that were just following orders. As in, the rules say you can't throw Trump off. And the woke mob inside of Twitter, so anybody that was saying that, they said, well, you're just a Nazi following orders. It's like, yeah, but it's your orders, dummy. It's your rules, your Twitter. You set up the rules. We're just following the rules. Well, then change the rules. That's what they did. It's fucking crazy. It's totally disgusting. I hope Trump, I'm no Trump fan, but I hope Trump and Charlie Kirk and Dr. Jay Bhattacharya and Dan Bongino and all these people just file a massive class action lawsuit against Twitter as a whole. I hope they file it against Jack Dorsey and personally, Yoel Roth, Vijaya Gadde, all these people. I want to see these people in courtrooms having to answer for this because they're dead to rights. They got them on. They've got the internal communications. It's over for them. And maybe it'll be a civil suit. I don't know. Maybe it'll just be a pipe dream because nothing's ever actually going to happen because you're going to have to go through the court system in San Francisco. Part six, Twitter, the FBI subsidiary. Okay. So this is where we get into contact with the FBI is described as constant and pervasive. Not good. Never good. This is where we're introduced to San Francisco FBI agent Elvis Chan, who wanted election misinformation accounts taken down, even when they were small ones or were joking. There's a Claire Foster account on Twitter. I don't know if you ever follow. It's a parody account. It's funny. It catches a lot of people, but she says crazy thing. I don't even know if it's a woman, but it's supposed to be like an older woman. And if you watch it for more, read for more than like two or three tweets, it's obvious it's a parody account. You'd have to be brain dead to think it was. Elvis Chan wanted it taken down. He thought it was real. And then Claire Foster comes out and says, listen, if you're in the FBI and you can't tell the difference between a real account and a parody account, you need to get out of the FBI and go to work somewhere else, I agree. But this is from one of the accounts that got banned. It says, I can't believe the FBI is policing jokes on Twitter. That's crazy. This was an account with 1,600 followers that got deleted because the FBI didn't like the jokes they were making. 1,600 followers. So weekly meetings were set up between Twitter, Department of Homeland Security, the FBI, the Department of Justice, and the ODNI as well. So FBI said there were, quote, no impediment to sharing classified information with Twitter, cementing their cozy business relationship. They basically said, we'll give you classified information. We don't care. We trust you. Which is, I think, illegal. And the FBI was then started sending lists of people for Twitter to ban. People encouraging Republicans to get out and vote on Twitter were taken down. So again, you can say, well, they weren't necessarily interfering with elections. The conservative accounts that were trying to tell people to get out and vote were deleted from Twitter because they didn't want those accounts to remind conservatives to get out and vote. That's election interference. Whether people want to admit it or not, that's what it is. It's not like barricading. It's not like telling people, Democrats vote on Tuesday and Republicans vote on Wednesday. That's obviously like really shitty election interference. This is just a more technological way of doing it. But you're an account that you're Scott Pressler or someone, you're out there talking about, hey, go out there and vote. And like you wake up one day and your account's gone. I don't think it really happened to Scott, but he's a get out the vote guy. So it's what you do when you are trying to cheat. So it's not good. Part seven, the FBI and Hunter Biden's laptop. There was intense communication between the FBI and Twitter just days before the release of the New York Post story, which happened on October 14th, 2020, the October surprise right before the election, ready to kick Joe Biden right in the balls by exposing that his son is a crack smoking pedophile who's doing deals with Ukraine and China and Pedo Pete and all that stuff. That's the name that he called his dad. So the feds wanted it suppressed because it would be bad for Biden. And I think a lot of people thought, well, wait a second. Trump was still the president, and the FBI reports to him, right? I mean, he's the boss, and the FBI is underneath him. So shouldn't the FBI be wanting to help Trump? No, the FBI hates Trump. They don't want him in there. So they went, they want the other guy in there, the other guy that won't give them a hard time about, you know, how they're the largest domestic terrorist organization in the world. The Biden administration is going to use the FBI as his own personal Gestapo, which is, of course, what has happened. So they wanted Biden in there. They don't want Trump in there. So I understand those that say, well, it's Trump's FBI. Well, it was Trump's FBI in name only, not in actuality, because they hated him. And again, I'd like to, you know, I'd like to kind of rewind for a second here and tell you one of the reasons why the FBI hates Trump so much. You have to go back like 50 years, which you might not think, but Roy Cohn was Donald Trump's attorney. Roy Cohn was running a sexual blackmail entrapment operation in New York City in the 50s and 60s, right? He was tied in with the Jewish mafia, and he was running this blackmail extortion operation, and he caught J. Edgar Hoover in it. And he had the goods on Hoover, who was the FBI director. So just understand this, that if you back up about 50 years, there was a point in time where Donald Trump's attorney, Roy Cohn, was blackmailing the head of the FBI, J. Edgar Hoover. But not really blackmailing him too bad, because they were friends and they would go to parties together. You got to read Whitney Webb's book. It lays it all out in there. You got in the first volume, One Nation Under Blackmail. Read about what Roy Cohn was doing, and so he was running a sexual entrapment operation, and he caught J. Edgar Hoover, and Hoover's like, "What do you want to do? Like, you're gonna take me down? I'll take you down." So it's like mutual assured destruction. So they were very comfortable and friendly with one another. But I just want people to remember, and they go, the FBI is so after Trump. Why is it? At one point, the FBI was literally held hostage by Trump's attorney. And they don't forget about that stuff, okay? So I think that that's important. I think it's important for some backstory, just some context, so that you know the relationship between Trump and the FBI. So now we've got this Hunter Biden laptop story, right? And the FBI comes out and gets involved, and they go, oh shit, you know, we got to put a stop to this. They know it's all true. They say it's all lies, but they know it's all true. So Elvis Cham, this is the FBI, San Francisco branch FBI cybersecurity agent who is now, might as well be embedded at Twitter. He's so close with Yoel Roth. He's sending him happy birthday, man, you know, sending him like emails, you know, on his birthday. So he sends 10 documents to Yoel Roth through a thing called Teleporter. Now, Teleporter is a one-way communications channel from the FBI to Twitter. It only goes one way. It goes from the FBI directly to Twitter and nowhere else. It's called Teleporter. The day before the story comes out, within hours, Twitter censors the story, even though the reporting of the Hunter Biden laptop was 100% accurate. Twitter censors it anyway, in part because the FBI had been telling them in the lead up to this, there's going to be a Russian disinformation campaign that's going to leak documents about Hunter Biden. And when it comes out, we just want you to be prepared for it. We don't know what it's going to be, but we hear through our channels that's what's going to happen. Wink, wink. You know, they know that it's going to be the October surprise. They know that. They know it's coming, and they're just prepping the social media companies to be aware of this. And you will know this because Mark Zuckerberg went on Joe Rogan and explained that the FBI came to them in advance of this and said that there's going to be a Russian hack and there's going to be hacked materials and it's going to paint Hunter Biden in a bad light. And when it comes out, just know that it's not real and that you guys need to suppress it. So it's not just Twitter saying this. You've got Zuck saying it too. And he said it on Rogan, in which people were like, holy shit, I can't believe he said that. I can't believe he said it in public. I mean, you knew it was happening. You just didn't expect to hear him say it. So the FBI told Twitter it was a Russian a hack and leak operation. But but again, they knew to expect that. So it wasn't a huge surprise to them. when it came. They were ready for it. So Twitter executives repeatedly reported very little Russian activity, even going so far as to say, quote, we haven't seen any evidence to support that claim by NBC News of foreign-controlled Russian bots. It simply wasn't happening. NBC was saying, well, there's Russian bots all over the place. And Twitter's going, even Twitter internally is going, we don't see any Russian bots. We just don't. So the feds start to push Twitter a little bit harder for more information and to change their policies so that the FBI don't need search warrants anymore. They're even talking to Congress quietly about it. They were telling Congress, like, listen, we need to sort of make it so that we can deal with these social media companies without having to bother with those pesky search warrants that, you know, legally we need to provide them with. So July 2020, now we're backing up a little bit. I told you it's going to go a little bit out of context here, but before the election, Elvis Chan, this FBI guy in San Francisco, arranges for temporary top secret security clearance for Twitter executives so that they, the FBI, can share info about the threats to the upcoming election. They tell them to expect Russian hackers. This is before the Hunter Biden laptop thing. So they get temporary top secret security clearance for the high level managers at Twitter. They say, we're going to pass you through. We're going to give you security clearance so that we can legally show you these documents, you know? And Twitter's like, oh shit. Okay. And then they're like, here's the documents. Russian hackers have stolen this information. This laptop is fake. It's all fake or it's whatever. And you're going to see it. It's going to be coming out pretty soon. And when you do, you'll be ready for it. So Yoel Roth even says later on in some of these internal communications, when the Hunter Biden laptop story hit the press, when the New York Post put it out, we were ready for it. We were expecting it. I was like, oh shit, that's it. You know, because they had been granted this top secret security clearance, but they weren't seeing real documents. Of course, they were seeing bullshit from the feds to make them think that it was a Russian hack. And it's a big elaborate scam. Like, we're going to give you top secret clearance. We're going to show you some real private, real information. Well, what they were showing them was bullshit, but they made it look, and they did a whole act, a big song and dance about giving them clearance and whatnot to be able to be in a position to see this. And then it comes out and they're like, wow, this is amazing. So in September 2020, Yoel Roth was at Aspen Institute for a tabletop simulation on a potential hack and dump operation relating to the Hunter Biden laptop. So again, if you just listened to last week's episode on the Aspen Institute, we talked about this. Well, they held a tabletop exercise where they brought in, I mentioned they brought in Nathan Gleischer from Facebook, who was a former Obama White House guy who's now running head of security for Facebook. And they brought in Yoel Roth from head of security for Twitter. And they brought these guys into the Aspen Institute, did a tabletop exercise saying, let's just simulate what would happen if, say, the media were to report on Hunter Biden's laptop in the future. Wink, wink. This is September 20th. And then what do you know? 6 weeks later, it actually wound up happening exactly like they simulated it. Again, nobody listening to this should be surprised, but the goal was to shape how the media covered it and how social media would deal with it. And the organizer of this event at Aspen Institute was a lady named Vivian Schiller. Vivian Schiller was the former CEO of NPR, National Public Radio. She's the former head of news at Twitter. She's the former chief digital officer of NBC News and the former general manager of the New York Times. So this is somebody that's deep state media, right? New York Times, NBC, NPR, Twitter, Aspen Institute, managing the media's response to this very real story that they're going to pass off as being a very fake story. Also, the top, in addition to Yoel Roth and Nathaniel Gleischer, I think I called him Nathan, Nathaniel Gleischer, was also the top national security reporters of the New York Times and the Washington Post. So they had all of the heads of the major media at Aspen Institute to role play this so that they would know exactly what they're supposed to do in the event that, oh, I don't know, a Hunter Biden-like laptop scenario happens, and then this information comes out right before the election, and then 6 weeks later, it happens exactly like they simulated it. So it was discovered in this leak, this is still the continuation of part seven of the Twitter files, it was discovered that the FBI had paid Twitter $3,415,323 for their efforts, which I would like to add is a monumental bargain for what the feds got from them. So moving on, part eight, there's 12 parts, we're almost done. How Twitter quietly aided the Pentagon's covert online PSYOP campaign. Oh, Lord. So if you recall, Twitter explicitly testified to Congress that it didn't allow Pentagon-backed covert operations on their site. But that was a flat-out lie, because they most definitely did, as they were partners in a state-backed program involving fake accounts. This is where we find that U.S. Central Command, otherwise known as CENTCOM, sent a list to Twitter of 52 Arab language speaking accounts we use to amplify certain messages. Okay. So CENTCOM is letting Twitter know, we've got 52 Arab accounts out there. They're ours. Okay. We use them to kind of get the narrative going, and we need you to amplify them for us. Twitter assisted CENTCOM with this, even though they went and sat in front of Congress and lied to them. So Jack Dorsey should be put in jail for what he's done, for lying to Congress. I mean, I am pretty sure that's against the law. Not that there are any laws in this country anymore. If you're on the liberal side, if you're a conservative, they put you under the prison, much like you could see with the January 6th people. You can lie to Congress if you're Jack Dorsey and nobody does anything to you. So they assisted CENTCOM with these accounts, not once or twice or three times, but they did it for 3 years. So again, there wasn't some mistake made while testifying in front of Congress. It didn't slip Jack's mind. He lied, because they had been working on it for 3 years, and he would know because he authorized it. Topics included. So what did these accounts, what were they promoting? What were these Arab accounts? They were promoting anti-Iran messages. They were promoting the Saudi-US-led war in Yemen. How you can promote the war in Yemen is beside me. I can't figure, the poorest country on the planet is being destroyed by the Saudis. They're starving people. There are 10 million people that will starve to death in Yemen because the United States and Saudi Arabia has put blockades on that country. And we're supposed to pretend like that's normal and that's fine. Twitter has blood on their hands for a variety of things, and that's one of them. And they also use these accounts to amplify the message that drone strikes were only hitting terrorists and were never hitting civilians, which of course we know is bullshit. Then CENTCOM gave Twitter a list with 157 Pentagon accounts on it. And then during these messages, you could find out that CENTCOM was, their propaganda network was also connected to Facebook, Telegram, and other platforms. So it was hardly contained to just Twitter. It was happening everywhere, as I think everyone would assume, right? I mean, there's no reason why the feds and the CENTCOM would just work with Twitter when they would also need to work with Facebook and Google/YouTube and moderate all that. And of course, the answer is they were. But this is the Twitter file, so we're not dealing with that too much. They accused Iran of flooding Iraq with crystal meth and harvesting organs from Afghans. All right, so none of that stuff is true. That's just the Central Command making things up to start wars. We're just disgusting. I mean, not we, us, you know, but just the American Empire. So gross. Moving on, part nine. This is called Twitter and, quote, other government agencies. That's an acronym. You know how I feel about acronyms. OGA. We'll get to that. I'll explain what it means. So the FBI tries to run damage control after the first batches of the Twitter files come out, right? And paints the FBI as being out of control and totally infiltrating Twitter, which of course they were. And the FBI doesn't appreciate that. So they release a statement that says, I'm assuming they put this out with a straight face. I don't know how they could, though. The men and women of the FBI work every day to protect the American public. It is unfortunate that conspiracy theorists and others are feeding the American public misinformation with the sole purpose of attempting to discredit the agency. They didn't deny it, though. If you notice, they didn't deny it. And I would remind you, as I often do, that the FBI is the largest domestic terrorist organization operating inside the United States. That's undeniable. They referred to the OGA. That's the term, other government agencies. OGA, whenever you saw that in these Slack communications back and forth, is a code word. It doesn't actually stand for other government agencies. What it stands for, it's a fake name for the CIA. So they're sort of like, they're talking to Ray McGovern, you know, and they're saying like OGA. He goes, yeah, that's where I used to work. It's CIA. Everybody knows that's the joking sort of nickname for the CIA, because they didn't want to put, like, even in their internal communications, they didn't want to write CIA because they know the CIA has the worst reputation in the world, right? So they didn't even write CIA. Instead, you would see OGA, which they said equals CIA. So they referred to the other government agencies as the code word that everyone knew for the CIA, but the feds were also working with Facebook, Microsoft, Verizon, Reddit, and even Pinterest. And that came out through these internal communications. It got to the point that Twitter was receiving so many requests to remove content from all these different federal agencies that they were partnered up with, that they were getting overwhelmed and confused. They kind of lost track. They're like, they were unsure, like, wait, who's that requesting this again? Didn't we delete these guys? ODNI is asking for this. I thought it was OGA, meaning CIA, you know, so there's confusion in there. It was just, there was so much going on. They eventually were just sending entire like Excel spreadsheets with just lists of accounts to delete. And it got to the point where when they were talking about a lot of this, the back and forth between the Twitter executives and the FBI, they were explaining to them that these were requests now, but the concept of requesting these accounts be taken down was temporary. That they were going to be moving into a stage where they were no longer going to be requests, they were going to be orders. So it started to take an even darker turn. Part 10, how Twitter rigged the COVID debate. This is especially nefarious because, you know, you can say what you want about they prevented Trump from becoming president again, and how do you quantify that? How do you measure that? You know, but with regard to the COVID debate, keep in mind that they silenced people that were talking about actual methods and treatments that worked. They were silencing them, and they were elevating and amplifying methods that didn't work. And so Twitter has blood on their hands for this one. And I would like to see a tribunal set up at some point, like a Nuremberg, you know, but like an actual real one that gets to the heart of this. Because if you were to really have some accountability, you would have to take the entire senior management of Twitter and put them on trial for crimes against humanity for this. The Biden administration was furious that Twitter didn't ban Alex Berenson, because Alex Berenson was on there talking about the shots as being dangerous. And Alex Berenson had an elevated voice. He had a big following, and he was making good points. I mean, we were a year ahead of Alex Berenson in the alternative media, but whatever. I'm glad he was talking about it. And he was making headways. Enough to the point that the White House knew who he was specifically and instructed Twitter to get rid of him. Okay. They censored information that was true, but was inconvenient to the COVID narrative. They discredited and suspended doctors and experts that disagreed with said narrative. They were instructed by both the Trump and the Biden White House to moderate the content according to their wishes. Google, Facebook, and Microsoft were instructed as well. That came from the White House. Trump was really concerned with not vaccine misinformation or truth. he was more concerned about panic buying and all of that. He didn't want people to freak out and start, you know, making a run on grocery stores, which eventually clearly would have led to a run on banks and whatnot. So he was more concerned with that. The Biden administration was more concerned with silencing people that were speaking out about the dangers of the vaccine. So Biden administration went after anti-vax accounts and accused social media companies of, quote, killing people for allowing vaccine misinformation. And when I say vaccine misinformation, what I'm actually talking about is the truth. But they didn't want that. So Joe Biden said that the social media companies were killing people because they were allowing misinformation. I mean, we live in an inverted world. The president of the United States, who cannot help but shit his pants in front of the Pope during a meeting, is going to accuse Twitter of murdering people. It's just wild, man. We are living through a crazy time. Well, eventually Alex Berenson sued Twitter and he won. And part of that, one of the stipulations was that Twitter had to release the internal communications that showed that the White House directly pressured Twitter to remove him. So, you know, Twitter out there or the White House saying, well, we never said to ban anyone. As part of a condition of settling that lawsuit, Twitter had to release the screenshots, the information showing those emails from Biden, the Biden administration, telling them, get rid of this guy. So for those of you that think that it's a conspiracy theory that the Biden administration was manipulating social media, or when Jen Psaki, that peppermint patty puke, was out there lying to the general public's face, we know. We now have the receipts. Part 11, how Twitter let the intelligence community in. So in 2017, Hillary Clinton accused Twitter of not doing enough to stop Russian disinformation, right? So Twitter formed a Russia task force. They formed a Russia task force that was going out and looking for all this Russian disinformation on Twitter. And an interesting thing happened. They didn't find anything. Twitter, who hates Trump and loves Hillary Clinton, and 99% of their people donate money to the Democratic Party, and they set up this Russia task force and with the express purpose of doing what Hillary Clinton told them to do and go out there and look for all these dirty Russians that are influencing Twitter. They did that, and they're like, there aren't any. And so Congress accused Twitter of being in denial about their Russia problem. They're like, you guys are making this up. There's Russians all over Twitter. They're like, we don't know what to tell you. There aren't. So Congress is lying. Hillary Clinton is lying. I know that's a shock to everybody. So they instead decided that, Congress instead decided that they were going to start trying to embarrass Twitter. They were going to start trying to leak stories to the press claiming that there were 2,700 accounts that Twitter refused to take action on. And this was done by Senators Warner, Klobuchar, and McCain, of course, who also threatened Twitter with legislation. So they said, get rid of these Russian accounts or we're going to start regulating you. I mean, again, that's fascism. The definition of it, the blending of the state with big business to benefit the state. Corporatism is when it's the same thing, but it benefits the corporations. So we have actual fascism, not the imaginary kind that the blue hairs are accusing everybody else on Twitter of, for not wanting young children to be sexualized by their teachers. No, this is real fascism. This is actually happening. And lastly, now we move on to part 12, the final part, Twitter and the FBI belly button. Oh, are you ready for this one? Okay, so in 2020, Twitter was starting to get annoyed that the public and private agencies were bypassing them and going directly to the media with their list of suspended accounts, the accounts that they wanted suspended. They would send these accounts over to Twitter, and sometimes Twitter was like, these accounts haven't done anything wrong. So they were instead, the feds were instead sending the list over to the media and having the media publish it. So the media would make Twitter look like they were not doing enough to stop this. And Twitter's like, hey, if you want us to do, like, reach out to us directly. And they're like, well, we have been, and you're not doing anything about it. They're like, yeah, but there's nothing to do about it. They're not doing anything wrong, these accounts. So the media started trying to link Russia to COVID stories of lab leaks. You know, that like anything that was talking about a lab leak, they were saying, oh, you know, that's Russia that's leaking that information out. They're trying to make you think that it's coming out of a lab in Wuhan. That's ridiculous. It would never be coming out of a lab in Wuhan. That's disinformation. That's Russian disinformation. And not just Russian disinformation. They said that the Iranians and the Chinese were, that their disinformation narratives were echoing one another. That's how they described it. So they're saying it's not just Russia. It's these other axis of evil, Iran and China and Chinese. And I'm surprised North Korea wasn't put in there too. So this enters this group called Global Engagement Center, GEC, again with the acronyms, enters the picture. They're an analytics / intelligence arm of the State Department. Okay, so we're talking about the State Department, which is a very, very powerful organization that doesn't fuck around. You know, when they get involved, they're nasty. So this Global Engagement Center was used by the state. I mean, they're an arm of the State Department. And they went to the media about Russia COVID stories, about it being an engineered bioweapon. And anytime you saw that it was an engineered bioweapon, they would say, well, that's Russian information, you know, disinformation. And anytime you mentioned anything about research being done at Wuhan, that was Russian disinformation. But this is the group that was pushing it. It was the U.S. State Department that was pushing that lie. And whenever you heard anything about the CIA being involved, they were saying that's Russian disinformation. But, you know, whether it's engineered bioweapon, research conducted at Wuhan, the CIA being involved, ironically, all true. Isn't that funny? They're suppressing that as Russian disinformation, the State Department was. But in actuality, it's all true, which is the reason why they wanted to suppress it, because it's true. Not because it's a lie. Again, you can say, you can spout lies all day long, but the minute you start talking about the truth, then they want to label it disinformation. This is about the time when BuzzFeed accused Zero Hedge of COVID conspiracies and got them kicked off of Twitter. I like Zero Hedge. I think they do a great job, very measured in their news. They report on all kinds of things, and they were kicked off of Twitter for COVID conspiracies. And the reason why it was COVID conspiracies, they said, hey, has anybody considered that it might've actually come out of this lab in Wuhan? And the White House went, shut them up. And the White House reached out to the State Department and he said, hey, you got to shut these guys up if you can. If we can't, you're going to need to. So, and then Adam Schiff asked Twitter to ban journalist Paul Sperry. That's illegal. Okay. Adam Schiff. Wow. I wonder if Adam Schiff sends Christmas cards to Ed Buck in prison. Every time Adam Schiff says something on Twitter, my response is Ed Buck, Ed Buck, Ed Buck, Ed Buck. Ed Buck is like he was a money bundler in West Hollywood, California. He was a gay man who was deeply involved in the community. Adam Schiff is a gay man as well. They're very, you know, Adam Schiff comes out of the West Hollywood group as well. Standard Hotel, all that stuff. And Ed Buck would pay black male prostitutes to come over to his place, and then he would inject them with crystal meth to party with them, and then he kept killing them. He killed like two guys, and then a third guy was in the middle of dying and stumbled out of the house, fell down the stairs, got to the sidewalk, and someone found him. And the police came and saved him, and then he's like, that guy, that crazy honky up in there is trying to kill me. And they're like, that's Ed Buck. He's killed two people before. That's Adam Schiff's best friend. That's why I always say, how's Ed Buck doing? So Adam Schiff, scumbag extraordinaire, went to Twitter and said, we want you to ban journalist Paul Sperry. And they did. So for the weekly calls, the State Department / GEC, the Global Engagement Center, NSA and CIA, God damn, they're all involved, have expressed interest in being allowed on a listen mode only phone call. So basically every week there's a phone conversation happening between Twitter executives and the FBI and the Department of Homeland Security. The other groups, State Department, NSA, and CIA said, hey, we want in on this action too. And the FBI and the DHS said, no, we're in charge of this. And they are referred to as the conduits, the FBI and DHS, meaning they're the only ones that are really doing, they're like doing active work in there. And they're saying that the rest of you, CIA, NSA, State Department, you guys can be on the call, I guess, if you want, but you can only be on the call in a listening function. You're not talking in this call. You can hear what we're talking about, but we're not going to allow you to participate. That was sort of the deal that had been made. And then during this whole thing, Elvis Chan, back to the FBI guy in San Francisco, asks if the social media industry could, quote, rely on the FBI to be the belly button of the USG, the United States government. So it's just weird. It's just weird. So that's how the 12th one ended. And so what we saw was that they were all there. CIA, NSA, State Department, DHS, FBI, mainstream, you name it, White House. They all were having weekly meetings with Twitter to figure out how they wanted to curate content there. So I ask you, what is the cost of censorship? You know? How many lives could have been saved with ivermectin, which was banned from being discussed on Twitter? How many? We'll never know. I mean, you can't ever measure that, but you know it impacted things. How many people made the decision? How many people were manipulated into making the decision to take the shots because of the dialogue and conversations that they heard on Twitter or Facebook or YouTube or whatever? The fact that they weren't allowed a second voice, they weren't allowed the other side of the discussion. They were only told pro-vaccine stances. They weren't allowed to hear the anti-vaccine stances because everybody was banned, like Alex Berenson. The White House specifically said, get rid of that guy. But the vaccines are safe and effective, and if you say anything bad about them, we'll fucking fire you off of Twitter. These people are criminals. Jack Dorsey, Vijaya, Yoel Roth, Jim Baker, all of them belong in prison for what they've done. Where is the outrage from the general public? Where is it? Where's the justice, right? I'll tell you what, it's been deleted, just like our Twitter accounts. If you like this episode, you can take the additional step right now of sharing it with your friends and family. If you want to connect with me, you can do so through the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. Thanks, everybody. I'll talk to you soon.